So if any human being can have either the qualities of masculine or feminine predominant,
yeah,
or be balanced in both, then if we go to the upper right, where clearly men have different bodies than
right.
women and different levels of testosterone
right.
and estrogen,
yep.
is there any inherent difference between men and women? I mean, you have a woman who has a lot of masculine qualities. Would she develop through the stages looking like a woman or looking like a man?
Well, the biology sets, what happens in each of the quadrants is they set kind of dispositions or tendencies, but none of them are destiny. Biology is not destiny. And you can be you can have a Y chromosome, masculine Y is X, you can have a Y chromosome and be more caring, more compassionate, more relational than almost any female in an XX body. It depends on all sorts of factors in the other quadrants and all sorts of other things that are going on. But if you actually look at the upper right quadrant, we start there and we look at the biology of male and female bodies, then there are some predisposing factors that are pretty strong. And even some of the really great feminist researchers like Janet Chaffetz, for example, who's one of my favorite feminist writers, gives a lot of importance to these universal biological factors because they do reappear in all cultures and they do set strong tendencies, not destinies, tendencies that affect the other quadrants. So if you're looking at, indeed, that testosterone and estrogen, they don't cause, but they have strong tendencies towards certain types of behavior. And I used to summarize testosterone by saying it has two and only two drives, fuck it or kill it. And that does tend to mark sort of masculine approach to things. Testosterone definitely drives certain sexual behavior. It also drives certain very, very aggressive and murderous behavior. And part of the problem of being a man is that fuck it and kill it sometimes get mixed up because they run very, very close together. So this is a large part of the problem of what male human beings do on this planet is because those two drives are very intense and get very, very mixed up every now and then. If you take women and for medical reasons you have to give them testosterone injections, 9 out of 10 of them say the same thing. It's, can't you please make this stop? Please make this stop. All I do is think about sex. And the second thing that they say happens is they stop crying. And then they find that their women friends who are crying all the time drive them nuts. So, again, these are tendencies, but they tend to sort of display themselves in behavior that tends, again, to more agentic or more caring. Female biological body has a couple of hormones, estrogen and oxytocin, for example, that particularly come into play when the woman gives birth and is nursing. So those hormones don't drive towards a sort of independent, strong, fighting kind of activity, but towards caring, touching, prehension, feeling. And you can sort of think of evolutionary reasons for this. The mother has to be in constant touch with the infant or she could lose it. If it was left up to dads to follow infants around, they'd lose half of the kids because they're off hunting or not paying attention. Women are very tactile and they have an extraordinary sensitivity to emotional degrees of intensity. And you can sort of think of all of those as being part of the tendencies that come with having a female body or a male body. If you take studies of women in so-called ambitious professions, let me preface that by saying, on average, an average male body has about 10 times the amount of testosterone as an average female body. If you take women in these high aggressive professions, lawyers, CEOs, and stuff like that, and you take women that are in low drive careers, such as a waitress or secretary, the women in the high ambition drives almost uniformly have considerably higher levels of testosterone than the women in the low ambition professions. Again, it's not destiny. There are exceptions. It's not the overall controlling factor.
How high compared to a man?
But see, not. That's the problem. Males still have 5 to 10 times more than high ambition females generally. But there are many, many, many other factors that go into it, of course. So you can't, just a measure of testosterone is not a measure of success. And in men, frankly, the ones with really high testosterone, you find them in prisons. So it's not a guarantee of your social success by any means. And it has its own problems. But it does suggest that testosterone is one component of a dickhead, kick-ass attitude that we all know and love as the human male. And it's also human males, rats and weasels are the only three animals that kill their own kind. So I think that sort of says something as well. So that's sort of the upper right quadrant. There's also Janet Chaffetz, when she was giving a really brilliant summary of male and female relations during different technological epochs, foraging, horticultural, agrarian, and industrial, pointed out that even simple things such as a male has an average advantage in physical strength and mobility compared to a woman who could be pregnant, for example, that even simple things like that make an enormous difference when you look at what happens in different technological epochs. We gave one quick example about horticultural. Women can produce foodstuffs because even a pregnant woman can work a hoe. But herding societies, plowing societies, are entirely dominated by males in the public sphere, tend to be very patriarchal and very aggressive, frankly. So all of these little things tend to play out. All the other quadrants are important. They all come into play, and you can modulate or even reverse biological tendencies. But those tendencies are there, and they are kind of important. We can talk about the upper left and the correlations with that, too, but I'll sort of pause there and see if there's any biological reflections you want to...
No, let's go with the upper left.
Okay. A couple of factors. One is that it's common to say, ecofeminists say it, or many social feminists say, that basically the feminine mode is, because it's linking and joining, is in a sense a healthier mode, or at least is a mode that needs to be part of any society, because the masculine mode, which tends to be ranking, separative, autonomous, agentic, analytic, and so on, when left to its own devices, can cause, you know, problems. And so what they want to do is basically say that the feminine mode itself is kind of our salvation, that what we really need is the feminine mode. And then they try to create a kind of an archaeology where in previous times there was a great mother society, a matriarchal or matrifocal society, and then there was sort of peaceful, harmonious societies. And then warrior, nasty men came in and created patriarchies and ranking and ugliness. And then what we're going to do is sort of go back to these caring, sharing partnership societies. And I personally think that that's kind of confused at almost each of those points. And I think there's some important ideas it's trying to get across, but it doesn't really fit with the evidence very well. Because the real thing is, let's sort of go back to Carol Gilligan's research as kind of a paradigm of what we're talking about here. Gilligan made two very important points. One is that women don't tend to think hierarchically. They tend to think relationally. That was her point. They think in terms of care, relationship, responsibility. Men think hierarchically. They think in terms of ranking and judging and analytic and etc. But both men and women develop hierarchically. In other words, both of them go through these three hierarchical stages of growth. So women go through these three stages with a communal relational orientation. They go from selfish to care to universal care. Men go through those three stages with an agentic, which is, again, selfish is the first one. The second is conformist, and they're putting their rights conforming rigidly to the world around them. And then the third stage, which in the female is universal care, in the male is universal rights. So rights means an individual has rights, and care means what we have to care for others. And those are the masculine and feminine forms of these three hierarchical stages of growth. Now, what too many feminists did was take the first part of Gilligan's research, women don't think hierarchically, and they dismissed, ignored the second part of her research, which is that they develop hierarchically. So they threw hierarchies out entirely and therefore sabotaged the path of growth to these higher stages, because they just killed the developmental path entirely by wiping out hierarchy. The problem is not that our society has masculine values and not feminine values. The problem is that feminine values at stage one are just as disastrous as male values at stage one. They're both egocentric, selfish, horrible modes and horrible ways to treat another human being. So society that's feminine, all feminine, at stage one is just as ugly as society that's masculine at stage one. What we need is not more feminine values. We need more masculine and feminine values at stage three, at the universal, compassionate, universal rights, universal care stages of development. So we kind of have to get out of that, you know, boy is bad, girl is good kind of thing, and orient it towards these stages of growth.
If more people are at this stage three in this model, we
right.
would have a more caring, linked,
absolutely.
Relational world. So the feminists who are saying we want more feminine values, they're interpreting that in an incomplete way, but
right.
yet that instinct to have a more caring world does make sense.
That's
what
right.
you're saying, though, is that it requires stage development
that's right.
in order for that to happen.
Yeah, and that's what Carol Gilligan is saying. And I think the research bears that out. That's one of the reasons the typology is important, because it also lets us know that we really do have these different types of judgments that we make about fairness and justice. That, again, masculine or feminine, but the two different types are, there's a notion of rights. Rights means an individual has autonomy. Rights means even a collective can't take rights away from an individual. And that's what sort of the masculine principle has to do with. But there's also, in addition to rights and justice, there's mercy and care and compassion. And these are very much father principle and mother principle. So the mother principle is, and this is what the mother is supposed to do, no matter what you do, I love you. The mother principle is unconditional love and regard. And when the infant does something wrong, the mother rocks the infant and says, you're okay, I love you just as you are, you're wonderful. That's the mother principle, that's care, that's relationship, that's mercy and compassion. Classic archetypal feminine yin energy. The father principle, on the other hand, says, do your homework, I'll kick your ass. The father principle is idealistic and it's idealizing. It sets goals and it sets direction. And it says, no, no, look, yes, yes, okay, we love you, all right, yeah, mom loves you, and but if you don't do this, you're in trouble. And fathers are there to instill discipline, direction, and to make judgments, because not everything is equally okay. If you're going to be a Nazi instead of Albert Schweitzer, I'm going to kick your butt. It's that kind of directionality that is equally important in human growth and development. We know what happens if kids have only father principle, they end up Nazi fascist dickheads. And if they have only mother principle, they just wallow, they self-contain, they're whiny, they want the world to take care of them, they're a mama's boy, and so on. So what you really want is this balance of masculine and feminine through these stages of growth. And bad things happen if either both of them stay at lower stages, or if there's an imbalance of either of them as you go up to higher stages. So primarily what we need now, though, is not more feminine. We need much more feminine at stage three than we have, and we need much more masculine at stage three than we have. And I think that's the first thing we kind of have to look at. And then, of course, there would be a balance of masculine and feminine there. But right now, 70% of the world population is at ethnocentric or lower levels of development. That means those first three levels that we talked about. And that's horrifying. That's really, really scary, because ethnocentric feminine energy is some of the scariest energy in the world. These are the mothers that offer their sons up to battle on the field because they want them to die for glory of Saddam and God and so on. These are the mothers that supported Auschwitz and Nazism and so on. Ethnocentric masculine and feminine energy is ethnocentric. They love their families dearly, but anybody that's not part of the tribe goes to hell and can be burned, sacrificed, crucified, and so on. So putting more ethnocentric feminine energy in the world is exactly what we don't need. What we need is world-centric, post-conventional, feminine and masculine energies. And so that's kind of a look at the typology that helps us clarify so we don't just get too much of, you know, one version of the typology and miss a more integral picture. And in this case, the typology helps us because it lets us know that we don't just need more feminine energy. We need more of a certain level of feminine energy. And that's desperately needed in this world right now.